Morning Edition and Morning News with Leslie Thatcher is brought to you in part by Park City Medical Center, Jans Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, Promontory Foundation, and Carl Malone Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram.
8:14 now. Good morning. Well, yesterday was the last day for bills to receive a committee hearing, which is an important hurdle for a bill to reach final passage in a legislative session. In the studio with a final update before this session concludes for another year, Park City School District Business Administrator Todd Halbert. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning.
So you basically spent the day yesterday at the lunch?
Well, early in the morning and then late in the evening were the committee hearings that had education bills.
Okay. Any surprises?
No, not surprises, but a number of bills that have some controversy with them were amended such that they look like they might make it through the rest of the session.
All right. We'll get to those in just a minute, though. So happening this so late in the session, I mean, does it give the district a chance to find out all about a bill and maybe defend a position?
This is kind of standard practice. It gets very busy as the last hearings are held. And then, of course, the next 48 hours, there'll be a lot of activity. So we're close to the phones, listening in to every conversation we can so that we can have some influence at this late stage.
Okay, so what have you got on your radar screen?
So right now we're watching a couple of bills. One is still watching Senate Bill 38. Wanting to make sure it goes through. It received amendments last night in the Senate Tax and Revenue Committee, which is an interesting place for an education bill to flow through, but nonetheless, it made it through that committee. And it was looking at putting up higher fences around this idea of not allowing school districts to raise the board local levy in concert with the charter school local levy raising. We at Park City held a meeting last week just to make sure we had options, and they just raised the bar even higher to keep those options from actually happening.
So what does this mean for Park City?
So at this point, I think we're okay. The measures put in place won't affect our decision-making abilities, but it's things like that that pop up the last minute that kind of make sure that districts don't do the things that the legislature doesn't want them to do.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about the charter school funding. Where do things stand with that?
So that one's looking like it will go through. So that's still that Senate Bill 38 or House Bill 193. They've been amended such that both bodies are ready to pass them. There was another piece with those that was called the equity funding weighted pupil unit. That was in that Senate Bill 244 that we talked about just a little while ago. Looks like that concept will be directed into maybe an interim study. So the bill itself may not progress further along, but the ideas behind it will into an interim review. And so that will leave about $20 million that will flow through the regular funding bill for equity funding, but more along the lines of Senate Bill 97, where the distribution would flow through to the districts that have low assessed tax valuations.
Okay. So in terms of new money into the district, I mean, what are you going to see?
That's a very good question. I wish I knew all of that. But right now, with a 3% increase in the value of the WPU, that will generate about $550,000 into the school district. So that's a good sign. There were some other tweaking to the money bills that impact what's called flexible allocation money, increases for special education funding, and increases for CTE as well. The net impact on that might be around $100,000 additional for the school district, but we'll have to wait for that to make it through final passage to know for sure.
All right. When you talk about a 3% increase, it seems like we were up to about 3.75. Has that been cut, or is that just...
Well, it even started off at 4.75 with the governor. The legislature came in very early saying 2%. It moved up to 2.5% in committee hearings, and then came out of committee hearings through executive appropriations, hitting the 3% mark. So it's been slowly creeping up, but I think it is where it will be now, at 3%.
All right. And again, this is money then that will come to the district from here on out.
Correct. Yeah, right? This is ongoing funding.
Mm-hmm. So bringing $500,000 into it that you can basically use as you please?
Yes, and just a reminder, we'll be going into the second year of a two-year contract with all our employee groups. And we had anticipated an increase in the value of the WPU, something in the range of 2%, maybe a little more than 2%. So seeing 3% from the legislature will ensure that all of those commitments can be funded in the upcoming school year.
Mm-hmm. Now, does the state run into the same problems that Park City kind of saw, and that is sustaining this? over?
Sure, and they're very conscious. When you look at their funding tables, you'll see a column that's called ongoing funding, and they make every effort to ensure that ongoing programs are funded with those ongoing dollars. Then they have a second column that's called one-time funding. So that's either the surplus from the prior year, or in some of the tax collections, especially with estate taxes, that only happens once. You know, the people will pay those taxes once, and then it's a different group that might pay in another year. And so they try to balance that out so that there isn't what they call a structural imbalance in the budget.
All right. And then I think I had read $90 million that they're going to help pay for new growth?
For enrollment growth, exactly. And so that'll be good. The projections for the Park City School District are about 24 additional students. Doesn't sound like a lot, but that's still money. That's a little over $100,000 in growth money. So that's a good sign. Our estimates were something less than that. So I hope that we see 24 students come so we can garner all those revenues.
Yeah. Again, that's with 24 kids, though, and at about $10,000 a cost to
student.
Educate that kid?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the weighted pupil unit, though, is closer to $3,900 for each of those students. So that's what we'll see.
All right. And then with technology, $15 million being put into that pot, does Park City get any of that?
We will not be participating in that program.
Because
the profile that they set out, so they call it a competitive grant, but what it is it's an eligibility grant. If you meet the profile that they're looking for and the programs that they would like to incentivize, then you're eligible for those dollars. We're already well down the path of one-to-one computer initiatives and things like that. So our profile doesn't quite match up with what they're trying to fund.
And then $3 million, I guess, for an early reading program for K through third grade. Does this help Park City in its efforts?
Again, we won't qualify. They've gone down a path now of qualifying districts, and our income profile doesn't meet those eligibility requirements.
No funding for the expansion of full-day kindergarten classes. Now, this was, I read the State Office of Education, one of its top priorities. Were you counting on this money to make this happen?
I would have been surprised if the money went through. There's already $3 million in place for early interventions, as it's called in the legislation right now. And enhancing that made sense, but again, there were some other larger ticket items, such as the technology bill, that the legislators were more interested in than what the state board had prioritized.
All right. Let's look at some of the other bills that came out of committee. One of those was House Bill, I think it's at 201, student testing amendments. This is a big one here because this seems to kind of contradict what happened just a few years ago.
It does. So what we're looking at here, Representative Polson wanted to take out the high stakes element in teacher compensation evaluations. And so it's now identified that the SAGE testing, that end-of-level testing, will not be allowed in its usage for evaluations of teachers, for compensation of teachers, because with the opt-out provision that came into play last year, there were fewer students taking the test, and it was skewing the outcome of those tests. So it wasn't fair to the teachers to have that information not available in those evaluations.
So that must come. I mean, the teachers had argued against this all along. So.
Yeah, and they prevailed.
Yeah. So will we see some of that, though, tied? Because lawmakers really wanted to somehow tie test scores with teachers.
It's going to be a challenge for the legislature and for the State Board of Education to now determine what that looks like. The tool that they wanted to use now is not available, and there isn't a replacement for that tool at this point. So there will still be evaluations, but we're unclear as to how that might tie into compensation.
All right. Out of the House Education Standing Committees, we had talked about this before. This is Senate Bill 45, and it's basically taking any penalties away from parents who don't require their kids to go to school.
Yeah, so on the truancy law, and a compromise was struck yesterday. There was a substitute to that bill that came out in the morning. And what it essentially did is it left a criminal penalty in place, but it reduced it from a Class B to a Class C misdemeanor. And it also prolonged the notification process that a school must go through to allow those parents to respond to their child not attending school, or for that student to correct their behavior and get better attendance going again. And so it went from a 10-day period to a 20-day period.
At that point, though, is it too late for a kid to catch up? I mean, that's a month.
It's pretty challenging. It's already challenging to miss 10 days. And so, but these are the worst cases. These are the students that are really not coming regularly and maybe for several years. So it's a pretty hardcore case. And but the compromise seems to make sense. At least there's the district has some due diligent work to do, and the parent has an opportunity to respond.
Yeah, now you get, you being the district, gets money for the kid if it shows up, you know, before October 1st. So
correct. So
one less kid to teach, huh?
But it impacts the following year. So the funding formula is average daily membership plus growth. So if the student is not attending the prior year, that reduces the average daily membership number, which thereby reduces the WPUs for the next year. So there is an impact, and that calendar stops after 10 days. So if you miss 10 days, we have to drop the student from that calculation altogether. So there is a fiscal impact.
All right. Senate Bill 163, this is kind of an interesting one. I mean, we have rules for how old a kid has to be to get into kindergarten. Howard Stevenson basically doing away with it, it sounds like.
Well, it wasn't so much doing away with it as it was increasing that age limit. So instead of being September 1st as a cutoff for getting into kindergarten, he was pushing it to December 31st. So that would actually allow additional children to come in, and they would be 4 years old coming into kindergarten instead of the anticipated 5-year-old age. And again, this bill went through some amendments as well. And so some caps were placed on it. Instead of having open season, everyone can come whose birthday's before December 31st. It's now limited by the enrollment size. So for this upcoming school year, half of 1% of the kindergarten grade level could be eligible, and then next year it would be 1%. So it's still kind of a pilot idea to see how that might be beneficial for students.
And certainly those of us with late birthdays, I mean, we're, you know, got through it just fine anyway. Does the bill require then some testing, though, to make sure that that child is ready for kindergarten?
Yeah, so there's supposed to be an assessment that is made to see if that child is ready. And the bill also has a provision in there that testing can come with a fee, because we don't normally assess those students as they come in. So if a parent wants to exercise that option, there may be a little fee attached to that.
Okay. Something I hadn't heard of. This is Senate Bill 43 about dealing with firearms safety and violence prevention.
It's been rolling along for most of the session. It came out early and caught a lot of attention, especially with the requirement for a school district to offer a class in the 8th grade. So we already have a pretty full schedule. To now have an additional required class was just challenging to try to make it work into the school day. This bill also went through an amendment yesterday, and it lifted the requirement and it changed it to a school district may offer a class between the grades of 5th grade and 12th grade. So it really reduced the requirement level and the ability for a school district to work in this particular class. It's not a required class for graduation or anything like that. And then it also spelled out some of the requirements for the class. Before it was a little more open-ended, now it's more prescriptive in what would take place in that class.
This is a semester-long class?
We're all trying to figure out exactly what that is. The primary core of it is to help a child who sees a firearm, what should they do? What's their course of action? So instead of going out and playing with it, the instructions are to go find an adult and let them know of that firearm and let the adult take care of that firearm. So that's at the core. That's the core issue. And then there's some other safety issues with regards to firearms that the class would introduce.
Yeah, I can't understand what would require more than a couple of hours.
Sure, yeah. So we're looking at how that might happen.
Okay.
Again, it's not a passed bill. It was amended to have that higher potential of passing.
All right. So come Friday morning, you think you're going to be okay?
I'll be dead asleep.
you stay up for the very end?
Depends on which bills haven't passed. So like if a Senate Bill 38 hasn't passed or Senate Bill 244 is still in the wings, I'll be awake listening to see if I can make any comment along the way.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention, Tom?
No, thank you for the time.
All right. Thank you. It's Park City School District Business Administrator Todd Halber with this legislation. Well, the Park City Council will be meeting in a three-day retreat starting later today in the studio with an outline of the agenda. Park City Manager Diane Foster. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning, Leslie.
So when and where is this happening?
This is happening today. There is a brief open session that will be at in council chambers at the back of the room where a city council will have open meetings training, and then they'll have some closed session items to talk about some of their internal things. Nothing bad, just personnel. And then on Thursday and Friday, which are the ones that I would encourage the public to come to, those will take place on the third floor of the library in the community room.
All right. So today's lengthy closed session for personnel, I mean, is this your annual review here? Is that when it happens? Or
By state law, I'm actually not allowed to disclose what the contents is, although I can tell you my review happens in the council reviews the city attorney and I in the December timeframe.
Okay. So you had a contract renewed then last December?
I'm not actually on a contract renewal. I have a contract with the city that that has provisions for how we would separate should the council choose that. So that's how that one's written.
But you're good for the year.
Good for
well, until
you never know,
otherwise.
You know?
Okay.
I believe so. I think we're in a good place.
All right. So now, Thursday and Friday, is that where you're also meeting at City Council Chambers?
That one is on the third floor of the library in the community room. So we welcome the public. We'll have chairs set up, and it's one that public can easily come in, come and go. We'll have the council at the far end of the room so that public can come and go as they please.
So if the public wanted to come, I mean, what would be the best time? I mean, that you would say?
I would say that I think the two most interesting time periods, one will be tomorrow morning. So tomorrow morning, and the mayor and I are kind of working, we talked last night, we're working on potentially some little tweaks to the agenda. In the morning, what you'll see is the city council talk about what they want to get out of the retreat. The mayor may facilitate a complete community discussion, and then either before or after that, the city council will go, and each of them will have an opportunity to get up and to present what are a few of their priorities for the next 2 years, 4 years, and 20 years out, kind of long-term vision. And they get to do that individually. And we've never done that before. And the reality is we have a lot of, I believe, alignment. It's not unanimity, but it is alignment among our city council. And I think it'll be really interesting to just see each person get up and have an opportunity to talk. I think we're planning about 8 minutes per elected official and talk about some of the things that that they believe in and want to see, which we may see little differences from person to person.
So the council's basically been asked to do some homework then.
They're doing homework. They have flip charts, and so they'll actually be presenting a flip chart that we'll have up in the room during the whole council session. The other particularly interesting part that I think will be on 9:30 on Friday morning. So council will have an initial prioritization discussion. This is something they requested at 1 o'clock on Thursday. And so that'll be going through, they spent the last 4 weeks having an hour and a half long study session each of those weeks on their desired outcomes. What do they want to see happen in the community? What are essential services? And so on Thursday, they'll take an initial opportunity to kind of order those, to rank those. But then on Friday morning at 9:30, they'll actually go through and say, these are what we want as our critical priorities. These are what we want as our top priorities. And as our high priorities, we want these items.
So currently, the transportation, energy, and housing are the current critical priorities of council. We could see those change?
I would expect, you never know, but I would expect those will probably stay the same. While we've made progress on each one of those, I wouldn't say we've solved any of them. We still have significant transportation challenges. We're still at about 5% of the homes in the community are affordable housing. And as you know, City Council set a goal of 10% on that front. And on energy, we have a net zero goal by 2022. The City Council wants to see the municipality in a net zero. So that means we're not producing more carbon than we emit. And by 2032, that the community is there. So we have significant things to do in all of those areas still.
All right. Also built into the agenda are what you're just calling hour and a half long city council general discussions. any idea that, I mean, it's basically anything they want to bring up you can talk about? Or
It is. This is new, and this is very different from what we've done in the past. And I will say, last year was the first year where we actually attempted, number one, to not over-program the retreat, and number two, to balance the retreat so at least half of the time City Council was talking, doing the talking, versus staff. We're actually swinging the pendulum even further. We've got about 5.5 hours of City Council discussion time planned, and that's where the city attorney, city assistant city manager, and I will step away, and the City Council, the mayor's been collecting a list of things that people are interested in talking about. I think you'll see them really focus on issues of around complete community, issues around the critical priorities. And I also think you'll see some discussion of things that you may see fall into the top and high priorities, not quite at the critical point, but one of the things the mayor's been working on the past year, and he's been spending a significant amount of time on this, is on Latino issues in our community. And in particular, the nexus where poverty and Latino meet. It's not all people in the community who are Latino are in situation of poverty, and not all people in the community in a situation of poverty are Latino. So, but where that nexus is something he's been working on. So we may see the just questions around lower-income individuals in the community become one of the focuses of the next year, I would imagine.
So I noticed that really the only staff presentations are going to happen during a lunch break. And so who have you kind of tapped to do those staff reports?
Well, the two areas where you'll see heavy staff involvement is Phyllis Robinson will be doing the facilitation. Historically, we've brought in an outside facilitator, and that can be a little bit pricey. And Phyllis did an amazing job last year, and so City Council actually requested that she come back this year and facilitate. The other piece is that where you have strategic planning a few different times on the agenda, that'll be facilitated by our operations budget manager, Jed Briggs, and he's been facilitating their strategic planning study sessions. Then at lunchtime, we've got a couple surprise presentations by staff. I will say one of them is a department presentation. That'll be tomorrow by a department that's been working on their own internal department level vision, mission, and kind of their values at a department level. And we had that presented at a citywide level to council a couple years ago. City Council loved it, so we're redoing this one. And I'll tell you, on Friday, we're going to see, we've had a request from initially City Council member Tim Henney, but then all of City Council, that we produce some more videos. Assistant City Manager Matt Dias and Communications Specialist Craig Sanchez have been working on that, and so we'll be premiering some new city videos.
All right. So following this 3-day retreat, then what happens starting next week?
So what happens is we this is a prelude to the budget process. Any good budget person will tell you, if you really want to understand a company's or an organization's priorities, look at where they're spending their money. And so we will use all of this, what we hear from City Council, as input into the budget process, and that'll start up pretty much right on the 24th, where you will see staff come back on some transportation and traffic issues, and what are some ideas, you've seen an initial presentation on that, but what are some ideas that staff has had about how to fund potential improvements to our traffic problem, as well as what are some of the specific projects, and we're working closely with the county on that.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I would, again, invite people. We go from about 9 o'clock in the morning until 4:30, 5 o'clock each day. And so I would invite the community come to the retreat. It's always an interesting discussion, and I think this year will be especially interesting with the council discussion.
Okay. Diane, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Legislative update. KPCW News Time now, 8:40. Good morning. Well, the Summit County Health Department tomorrow will release a survey to gauge how it's doing with offering mental health and substance abuse treatment. And the studio to tell us what the county is looking for and why it's important to have Health Director Department Rich Bulla. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So why are we doing this?
Well, because we don't know exactly what the needs are. As I think most people know, nationally, at a state level, and certainly locally, there are gaps in the services provided to people who suffer from mental health illness. substance abuse, other issues like that. And we have never done a survey like this in Summit County. And in fact, most surveys that have any information at all on them about mental health are actually primarily physical health surveys. So we decided with the help of Summit County Council and Valley Behavioral Health to do really a focused assessment of mental health needs among our citizens. At the same time, we're doing a systems analysis, so we're looking at what programs we have, what programs we don't have. And once we get the information from the assessment, we hope to better match what we've got with what the needs are and then identify ways to address some of those gaps.
So everybody in the county will be invited to fill this out, or is it a select few?
It is open to everybody. It's in English and Spanish. We're going to be administering it online. In fact, if you go to summitcountyhealth.org, it will be online there. It's actually online now. The official launch, though, is tomorrow. And then we'll also be doing it in a way that we call convenient surveys. So instead of expecting people to go where we are, come where we are, we'll go where they are. And so that will imply that we'll be at events, community events, waiting rooms for people's health clinic, for example, provide it through the services and programs that we offer at the health department, and really reach out to the community. We're hoping to really get a lot of people completing this thing, to get a representative idea of what's going on.
What would that number be to be successful in your mind?
Well, I will be disappointed if we get much fewer than 500. I would prefer way over 1,000. This survey is interesting because the survey itself was developed by a steering committee, and that steering committee has representatives on it from every part of the county. And literally, they built this thing. And so it is a ground up community survey. I'm excited about the process. I think that it will not just get us information, but also hopefully mobilize a conversation and mobilize some initiatives on the community level to better address these needs.
All right. So not only are you looking for mental health treatments, but also substance abuse treatments well.
Yep.
And what, trying to find out the barriers that make that possible?
Well, you know, a really easy example of that is that we don't have, for example, a detox facility in Summit County. We don't have inpatient facilities in Summit County. We don't know that we necessarily need those because we've got them regionally, but the bottom line is we don't know. You know, we don't know really what the needs are. So the resources are never going to be adequate to match all of these needs. And so part of what will come out of this assessment is really a priority setting process so that we can say, okay, here are the greatest needs. Here are some areas where we need perhaps additional resources, and then we'll put together a strategic plan that will help us go after that.
All right. And you want to find out, I mean, is it the cost? Is it where the facilities are? Is it people just don't want other people to know? So there's kind of a whole privacy issue there, mm-hmm. child care, language issues.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's interesting you bring up the stigma attached. That's one of the things that we hope to begin to break down by having a conversation. And KPCW and the Park Record and Summit News have all been really great about supporting this discussion. I know that Angelique will be, I'm presenting tomorrow at Rotary, and they're going to help us get the word out at Sunrise Rotary. Angelique will be at that meeting, and I anticipate we'll do a story. And so part of what we're trying to do is really break down that stigma, break down the barriers to having the discussion.
Yeah, because we don't think twice about talking about diabetes.
Yep.
But when it comes to mental health, which is basically, you know, another type of disease, it's why is that, do you think?
That's a great question. For one thing, it's a very, very personal issue. And it's especially personal when it affects families and family members and children, for example. We have some brave people in this community who have stepped forward and written letters to the editor and really been out in front of things to tell their story, and I think that's helped a lot. But it's still there. We don't fund it at an adequate level nationally. President Clinton passed something called the Mental Health Parity Act when he was president, and it, in essence, requires by law that mental health is treated as a disease and funded as a disease. And that really has never happened. And so, you know, it's both on a national level, state level, and certainly a local level.
And it's, I think what you're also looking to see how things work with not only the person involved, but with our courts and our jails
yes.
and our law enforcement. So it's a kind of a multi-pronged approach here, huh?
Yeah, that's right. The legal component is actually a little bit separate from this specific assessment, because we have actually an internal work group that is looking at areas that we can better build services related to that, like pretrial services and have a better, a tighter referral process into counseling for those individuals who might have an encounter with the law. But we are also working on that. That's absolutely an important component of the overall picture of what we're going to try to do.
You know, when we talk substance abuse or mental health, but as you are aware, the state legislature this year passed a resolution basically classifying pornography as a public health crisis. Does that fit into all of this as well?
You just threw that one at me. I haven't given that a lot of thought, actually. I have given, not from the perspective of mental health, I've given that significant thought from the perspective of reproductive health education. And the legislature this year did some, in my view, some interesting things. They aggressively fought a proposal by Representative King to bring in, for lack of a better word, sex education to students. And then they focused on the issue of pornography. And it struck me that perhaps they view sex education as pornography, and that's one of the reasons that they did not want to support that bill. In public health, we absolutely support comprehensive education, but Representatives King's bill went down pretty handily. So we're going to continue working on that. From the perspective of pornography, I would agree, just off the top of my head, it's probably a public health issue. I don't know that there's anything that we as a public health department can really do about it. So I would say directly in response to your question, I don't think it's part of this survey. It might ultimately be part of the issues that face people with mental illness.
All right. You're going to be putting the word out. People just go online, Summit County Health.
SummitCountyHealth.org. And tomorrow the Rotary, one of the things I'm going to ask them is to step up and use all of their connections in the community to make sure this survey is spread far and wide. We'll have articles in the paper. I should mention there's a group called Connect. They're an awareness group that is working on a whole series of activities during Mental Health Awareness Month in May. So we'll be having some movie screenings, community forums, and some other events throughout May.
All right. And then the timeline then in terms of getting the deadline to fill one out and then when you'll have results back?
We'll be collecting data through the summer. We will analyze the data late summer, develop a strategic plan, and we hope to be in front of council and other community partners having the discussion about what we found in the fall.
Okay. And that's when the results will be released as well?
Yes.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Nope. I think that's it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Rich. Rich Bolla, the director of the Summit County Health Department. KPCW News Time now, 8:50. Joining me now in the studio, Jesse Hunt, director of the Park City Ski Team. Good morning, Jesse.
Good morning, Leslie.
Okay, so what have we got? Do we got kids' final races of the season coming up?
Yeah, that's right. It's March Madness for us with the Park City Ski Team. We've got championships going on all over the Intermountain West, and we actually already had a few of the championships. The U19 Nationals happened over in Colorado at Copper Mountain this past week, and had some great results over there. David Domonoski was third over there in the combined. Andrew Miller was fifth in the giant slalom, and Claire Thomas and Charlotte Townsend were eighth and ninth, respectively, in the women's GS. So, some great results over there at the national level. We were real excited about that. So we have those athletes returning, and then we have a bunch that are heading out. And actually, we had a YSL championship at Bryan Head in Utah, and we had three kids win down there in different categories. Lily Walden, Griffin Rogers, and Behringer Crosset all won races down there. So our little guys are having fun out there and doing well as well. And today we're sending a group off to Jackson Hole for the U14 regional championship. So we're sending nine kids up there. And just a lot going on. In addition to that, we have 18 athletes that qualified for the U16 championship in Mammoth Mountain. So We're sending kids all over the West here this next week or so. Exciting times.
All right. So these regional championships, we used to call them, what, Junior Olympics, huh? We don't do that anymore?
No. That branding's over. But they are the same level of race. You know, these kids are qualifying through the season to try to reach the higher levels. And actually, there's a nice structure where there's local races. And if they qualify out, they go to the divisional level, regional level, national level. So, you know, these kids are all trying to make it to that next level athletically. And we had 149 kids making it to championships out of our 200 population membership. So think kids are going to championships and enjoying it and having fun.
Yeah, that's great. Boy. Pretty impressive. All right, so coming up, let's see, Saturday, April 2nd, you are hosting the Alumni Night. This is not something you do every year or every few years, is
that's,
that it?
That's correct. We do a Hall of Fame dinner, alumni reunion every other year, and we're excited to induct some people that are supporters or former athletes that have gone on to greatness or are coaches that have provided some great leadership. Over the years, those are really the kind of the areas that we're focused on. And this year, we're going to celebrate Patty Formicelli, Shannon and Jeremy Nobis, Jana and Gary Cole, and Phil Thompson for their support and leadership and athletic greatness over the course of time. So,
okay. Well, I know who all these people are, but maybe you should talk a little bit about, Patty Formicelli.
Yeah, Patty, she's been with the Parks. She was with the Park City Ski Team for a number of years as a coach, and she coached at a number of different levels during her time, but she started in the 70s even and coached for over 30 years for the Park City Ski Team. So an incredible run for her, coaching for the program and had a great impact. Jeremy and Shannon Nobis both were Olympians. They had skied as young kids here at the Park City Ski Team before moving on to that higher level. Jana and Gary Cole and Phil Thompson, they really got together and kicked off the July 4th 5K fun run that we still run today. So then they started that in the early 80s. So a long run of support from those local business people. So we're excited. We got a great group of people. We hope to get people out. We hope to get alumni out. We obviously it's more fun when everybody decides to commit to it and show up and enjoy the night. So
just a kind of a one day, one night deal, or
yeah, it's really just a dinner with a program. And, you know, obviously it's time to connect and, you know, we'll have some, you know, certainly some mingling time and it'll be a pretty relaxed atmosphere. But we do want to celebrate our inductees as well.
All right. So public's invited to attend. What tickets are available? Or
yeah, you can go on our website and you can get tickets there at this point. So our website is parkcityskiteam.org. Under events, you'll see alumni event, and you can sign up through our online registration.
Okay, and this is being held where?
At the Marriott.
On Sidewinder?
Yep, the Marriott on Sidewinder.
Okay. So, anything else you want to mention?
Well, we ran another town race, and we've got our finale coming up on March 21st, Monday night. So we hope to get some more people out for our finale. It's a fun time to celebrate race and kind of celebrate the season. And we'll have awards in four categories, and we've also got a category for high school athletes that are not registered with USSA. So that's been fun to see some of those athletes come out. So it's a lot of fun, and it's fun for all levels. You know, it's really both. There's some amazing skiers, as well as novice just coming in and testing it out. So it's pretty diverse, and it's fun. So come on out.
Okay, Jesse. Thanks.
Thank you, Leslie.
Jesse Hunt, director of the Park City Ski Team. KPCW News Time now, 8:56.
Morning Edition and Morning News with Leslie Thatcher is brought to you in part by Park City Medical Center, Jans Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, Promontory Foundation, and Carl Malone Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram.